We're joined now by Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. And Elliot, I got to start off with this one. Do you remember Jake Oettinger?
I do remember him vaguely.
Okay, though he was like
Did
so...
Did he play in the NHL?
You know what, Fried? He's like so 5 minutes ago. Like the new hotness is Jordan Binnington. Sorry, I'm already past Jake Oettinger. I'm right on Team Binnington now. He's the new hotness in the 51 saves, Elliot.
Yes.
And in that second period, Colorado with 39 shot attempts against the St. Louis Blues. Like, we've seen 3-2 games before. That was not a 3-2 game. That was a 3-2 game. Thank you, Jordan Binnington. Your thoughts on what we saw yesterday?
13-0 in overtime too, right? They were all over them. Binnington was great. It's kind of, as I was watching that game last night, I was kind of laughing at it. It's just amazing to think like a week ago he wasn't even their starting goalie.
He didn't start the series.
No, didn't start against Minnesota. It's kind of like just it's like funny when you think about it that it goes from being the backup to holding them in that game. Colorado looks really good. You know, as we talked last night, they look like they're going to go 16-0. Now, this was the point last year where it kind of went off the rails for them. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But boy, do they look! They look fantastic. Everybody on that team looked good last night. There wasn't a single person I looked at and said, "Boy, that guy didn't look good." They all looked fantastic.
They really did. This is going to be a tough one. Like you always say, you're never in trouble until you lose at home. So technically, St. Louis is still okay. But this is a tall order. Like that team, like the team just looks super fast. Like we're coming off watching the early game, and listen, there's a few moments where you know Kucherov turns on the Jets, especially at that goal where he completely undressed Ekblad, and you're like, okay, so there's the little burst there. But it seemed as if in the Tampa game, Tampa was sort of following the Washington model of let's slow Florida down, no gathering up speed in the neutral zone, and it was played at that pace. And then we got to the Colorado game, and the puck dropped, and it was it just pedal down, like for the entire three periods in the overtime. That game was so fast, Elliot. That was a burner last night.
And it's not like St. Louis is a team that is really afraid to play certain ways, right? Like they're not just a grind. When they won the Stanley Cup, they were more of a grinding team, and now they've. I mean, people forget they had 920 goal scorers this year. Like they can score. They can play an up-tempo game, and they got totally steamrolled by those guys last night. Colorado just has another level.
Yeah. When you say a grinding game, is that Carney for slow? Because
yes,
that St. Louis team
was cloud of dust.
That St. Louis team that won the cup was pretty slow. So we'll see what happens in this thing. Game one, Avalanche win 3-2. Tampa draws first blood in their game against the Florida Panthers, and front and center is Nikita Kucherov. Now, someone texted me over the weekend and said, you know, he was told that Kucherov had like a fever of 102 in that game on Saturday, which just blows my mind. But we knew he was sick with something, some type of illness, but you couldn't tell last night, Elliot. Kucherov was elite last night for Tampa.
Well, he took over the game, really. Like, first of all, the thing that's tough for Florida last night is that Tampa dictated the pace of play in that game. And we talked on one of our shows recently about how I think Washington had given teams a blueprint on how to play Florida. Don't be overly aggressive unless the puck is deep in their zone. You know, clog up the neutral zone and figure out what you have to do on the power play. And Washington gave Florida everything they could handle before Carter Verhaeghe, you know, put on the cape and won the series. Mm-hmm. Last night, it just looked to me that Tampa just said we're gonna do the same blueprint. And you know, there's a couple of things. First of all, as you said, Kucherov just obviously is healthier now. He discovered Tylenol or something last night, Jeff.
Because, went to Lourdes. He made a trip to Lourdes and healed up, and he bathed in the holy water, and he's come back, Elliot.
Yeah, he was really good last night. I mean, he ran over Giroux on the first shift.
Yeah.
You know, he was effective. There's no question about that. And you're right, the move he made on Ekblad, like, that's a Norris Trophy candidate right there. And he absolutely undressed him in open ice. Kucherov was fantastic last night. But, you know, the thing that was amazing to me is that, you know, the Tampa put their bodies on the line. They – They were blocked. There was a play late in the game. It was 4-1. There was like a minute left, and McDonough gave the puck away, and they went down. They blocked two shots. It's 4-1 with 30 seconds left. This is not going to affect the outcome. And they've already lost one defenseman. Cernak had left the game, but it just didn't matter. They're like, it's a mentality. This is how we play. And, you know, I think if Tampa ends up winning that series, that's going to be a game that Florida's going to look at. You know, they had a few more days rest. They had an energetic home crowd. And from the moment the puck dropped, Tampa dictated the way that game was going to be played. And that's a game, if you lose a series, that you look at and you say, boy, I regret that one.
Yeah, that, you know, how many times have we talked about Tampa and, you know, the saying structure or sit? Like, that's just like all the rules, like no D to D under 10 minutes, no defenseman playing it on their backhand, automatically going down to block a shot. You know, when you turn it over at this point, the puck doesn't go in this area of the ice. Like, they have, like, I know all teams have their rules and have their structure. The one thing that impresses me so much about Tampa is how, when they're locked in, like, nobody breaks any of the structure or sit rules. Like, they all, like, their discipline. Like, we think of Tampa and, like, okay, look at them freewheel the puck and they throw it around and maybe they're guilty of overpassing in the offensive zone, or as the coaches will call it, the fun zone. But when it comes to defending, this team is all business, Elliot. Like, they follow their structure to a T. All their little rules, all of it, they all get followed. It is like a clinic in discipline on defense for Tampa. That's one of the most impressive things for the Bolts for me.
That's how you win. And that's smart enough to understand, okay, when you guys have the puck, it's fun time, right? Like, I like how you use that phrase, the fun zone that they use. When you guys have the puck, you know, knock yourselves out. But when we don't have the puck and we're defending, you know, here's the rules. I don't see, and they're disciplined enough to do it. Like that's the thing. Like, every people look at, like, there's two ways that you win. You win with great players, which they clearly have. They have a bunch of guys who are going to the Hall of Fame, and you also win with will and discipline, and they have that too. You know, like, I can imagine that the way that Tampa played early on in that game wasn't the most fun way to play for them, but they're disciplined enough to do it.
Yeah. Tonight, a couple of games, the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes, but I want to start by talking about the Battle of Alberta. Now, you know, one of my favorite stories about the late Dave Semenko was how he would talk to players on the ice. And I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned this particular story to you, but Semenko always referred to this as witty goon talk. He didn't like when players just pulled up to someone and said, "We're going to go," rah, 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 and yell and scream and all that. Dave was much more cerebral than that, and I would say more Hannibal Lecter-like when he invited someone to a dance. So Semenko loved saddling up to someone, especially during the Battle of Alberta, and turning to them, and instead of yelling at them saying, "We're going to go," he would whisper something along the lines of, and this was one of his pet phrases, as I'm told, "Why don't you and I go on a little canoe ride?" Which has got to be frightening to hear coming out of the mouth of someone like Dave Semenko. Now, I don't think we're going back to the days of the four-hour games and the sticks all over the ice and referees on notepads trying to make sense of what did Baxter just do and is that McSorley or McClellan and what did Poplinski do and, you know, did Tim Hunter come over the boards? Who was first off the bench? I don't think we're going back to those days, but this one should still be a nasty one, Elliot.
Well, first of all, I thought when you brought up Hannibal Lecter, you were going to say that Semenko's line was, "I'll have your liver with some flava beans and a nice Chianti."
That would be Semenko, though. If anyone's going to say something like that, it would have been the late, great Dave Semenko. He was that kind of guy.
I can't wait to see this. I mean, obviously, like, I went down, I think I was saying last night, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole the other day and just watched a whole bunch of 80s and early 90s Flames Oilers stuff, and you forget all of the things. You can't possibly remember all of the stuff that happened. And, you know, it brought back so many great memories of watching those games and those points in my life. And, you know, like, I forget, like, I totally forgot about Marty McSorley spearing Mike Bullard.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe I totally forgot that. You know, but just some of the, like, the other thing I forgot was in their last meeting in 91, when Esa Tikkanen, and you forget what an unbelievable game Tikkanen played in that game seven. Calgary up 3-0, he scores. And then, you know, Messier can't even join the celebration because he's so banged up. And, yeah. and you think about, you know, everything that Messier represents, you know, Perry Barazan, just like the Calgary emotions when they finally beat them and in 1986, there was so much incredible stuff. And, you know, we almost have to stop comparing it to it. It can't be like that anymore. Like the sport just isn't like that anymore. But when you look at some of the most emotional moments of the last few years in the NHL, they still surround Calgary and Edmonton. Zach Kassian, Matthew Tkachuk, Mike Smith and Cam Talbot. Like there's still something about big games between those two teams that arises a passion that we don't see a lot. And I'm really curious to see how this starts tonight. Like Matthew Tkachuk, it took him a while to get going in the last series because, you know, they were going after him and they were trying to take him off his game. And it worked early on. Like, does Edmonton do that? Does Kassian try to engage Tkachuk tonight?
Or Kane.
To see if they can
Kane.
Just to see if they can try to get him off his game early in this series like he was last time. I think there's the way McDavid has played Calgary. There's the way that Calgary is. There's the way Goodrow finished that series, like on an absolute tear, dominating shifts when he was on the ice. Mm-hmm. And, like, the other thing, too, I wonder about both these teams is the pressure on them has been so much to win. Like sometimes when you win your first round, you kind of breathe and say, okay, we've got the first one. Well, yeah. Like neither of these teams, there's going to be so much expectation on the series tonight, Jeff. Are they really going to get a chance to breathe after winning a first round? Like, I mean, I think it's going to be incredible.
You know, I was talking with someone from a team today who is very much looking forward to this game. Like, I think we all are. And this person brought up the point that there's only one bad thing about it. And that's that Leon Draisaitl is not at 100%. Like in a series Chris Tanev as well, although he was on the ice. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that we don't like, oh, you want to see great teams meet deeper into the playoffs. I always say, give me the big matchups first when the players mm-hmm. are the healthiest. I know we make a lot about the war of attrition and, you know, when you get to the Stanley Cup final, you know, they look like, you know, everyone looks like a Civil War soldier and everyone's mm-hmm. all bandaged up and bleeding and, oh, got to cauterize this and get them back out there. Like, I like it when the teams, when the matchup you want to see, you know, you can get a legitimate result because both sides at least started. I don't know if you're never going to finish it perfectly healthy, but I always enjoy it better when there are two teams that are at the peak of their health or whatever can be expected to be healthy after an 82-game season. And unfortunately, when you look at Leon Draisaitl, you can't say this guy's anywhere close to 100%.
Right. Although he says he's fine.
Well, of course, everybody's fine. Everyone's perfect. Everyone's fine. My hand is okay. And then we find after, yeah, I broke it in that fight.
I'm with you, Jeff. Like, you know, I want to see Edmonton Calgary with a healthy Draisaitl and a healthy Tanev. I completely do. Unfortunately, it's just not realistic, right? Like we're looking at, you know, Tampa won last night without Braden Point. It's just the way life is at this time of year. It's just the way it's going to be. And although I think you're completely right, you know, I mean, and I'm sure there's more people banged up that we don't know about.
I wonder about Tkachuk. I've wondered about Tkachuk's hand ever since the raffle fight. I really have. And maybe I'm just looking for it because I have something in my head about it, and we'll find out about, you know, when the big reveal happens, whenever the playoffs are done. But I've wondered about that. I think it's just when you know how intense these players are and how hard they go at each other, I think it's folly to think you're going to come out of it unscathed. And specifically when you think about how Matthew Tkachuk plays.
And in the playoffs, it's all different. The players change. There are things they will do to each other at this time of year that they will not do to each other in the regular season. It's that simple.
want to get in a couple of notes from some other teams from your piece at sportsnet.ca. But first, a thought on Carolina and the New York Rangers. This is going to be a tough test here for the New York Rangers, who, as we talked about on the podcast, probably, and a lot of it was because of goaltending all season, but Kreider had a great year as well, got to a place a year, maybe 2 years sooner than the organization expected. But here they are, into the second round, facing off against one of the best teams in the NHL, the Carolina Hurricanes. How do you see this one?
Well, I got even more respect for Shesterkin, the way he handled himself in the first round. He was really screwed up there, and the Rangers were on the ropes, and he found his game. You don't have time to take a week off from practice in the playoffs and just work on your technique. You have to be able to get going and get going fast and have a short memory and find your game, and he did that. I think that was a very impressive performance by him, and he's not going to be able to afford a letdown against this series. I think Pittsburgh was good. The series changed when Crosby got hurt. You know, Pittsburgh dominated a lot of the chances. The underlying numbers really favored them. I think Carolina is a hell of a team. It's probably unfair. I'm still not sold on Ronta. It's probably unfair for me to say that, considering he won a game seven and generally played very well. But I still give the goaltending edge to the Rangers. But everywhere else, up and down, I really like the Hurricanes. And I think if the Rangers have some of the problems defending Carolina that they did against Pittsburgh, they're going to be in real trouble in a hurry.
Real quick note here before I get to something. This is a congratulations. I just got this note from Joey Kenward. So, first pick in the 2020 U.S. Priority Draft in the Western Hockey League, Blake Fiddler from Dallas Stars Elite 14U AAA. That is Vern Fiddler's son.
That's nice. That's very nice.
Cool. Nice little touch there. Okay, a couple of things from, one thing I was talking to someone about today. I was really intrigued because I think, like a lot of people, I'm all curious about the Kevin Fiala story and where this ends up. And, you know, you've talked about the Los Angeles Kings and written about the Los Angeles Kings and wanting goal scoring, and that could be a fit there. And, you know, Minnesota is looking for, you know, prospects and, you know, picks and, you know, players on entry level deals. You know, I was talking to someone this morning who brought up the point that, you know, the Minnesota Wild, you know, further to your point about the Los Angeles Kings, yes, they want picks and yes, they want prospects. Do you think they go shopping for LTI contracts as well?
You know, I looked into that with the Wild because Shea Weber's contract was available last year. Yeah. And I thought they were one of the teams, and someone just said to me, they walked through it with the league. And it didn't make any sense for them.
Doesn't work.
You know, it doesn't work. It didn't work. You know, one of the things is to use the LTIR. Number one, you have to be able to activate the player on your roster for a time being anyway, and that would be extremely difficult for them. Mm-hmm. And number two, you just don't want to be an LTIR that long. And you know, that's one of the things that's going on with Montreal right now is, if Price can't play, and assuming he doesn't retire, you know, they could be in LTIR for $18 million. Like that's really difficult to handle. Really, really difficult to handle. So I did look into that when the Weber thing came up, but I'm told it didn't make any sense for them.
Okay. Seattle and how they may affect the free agent market. We know they want goal scoring. There's a few teams. Los Angeles wants goals. I would think the Boston Bruins are in that mix as well. How much hinges on what Seattle does in free agency?
Well, there's not a lot of room this summer because the cap really is only going up $1 million. However, if there's one team that has room and I think will be motivated to spend it, like that's the other thing. There are going to be teams that have cap room, but some of them, you know, still don't see it in their place to be cap teams, right? You know, I think, you know, for example, I think Buffalo would be one of those teams, I would guess, and maybe Detroit potentially another. But I think that a team like Seattle looks at this year and says, we have to take a step forward and we have to address some of our challenges. And one of their challenges was offensive play. And, you know, I think that, you know, for a long time, you've been kind of waving the Klingberg flag. I think that he's one of the people they've kind of looked at. It wouldn't surprise me if Letang was the kind of guy they were looking at. And I think up front, again, like, you know, I think there's lots of offensive players out there that I think they would look at if they hit the market. I think Seattle knows they've got to be able to score more. And, you know, the reason I wrote the teams and agents are curious about it is agents want to know that they have some leverage. And I think a lot of people want to know how much some of these potential UFAs, how much leverage they really have. And I think Seattle's plans, and obviously you can't tamper, but I think Seattle's plans are going to play a big role in some of these negotiations.
Fly through a couple of more here really quickly. Eric Comrie, goaltender, Winnipeg, valued.
Yes. Well, Comrie had a really good year this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's shown, like, remember a couple of years ago when he played on like four teams in a week? He handled it really well. I think he's a pretty low maintenance guy. He showed from that. He had a good year this year. And the way it works is at his age and experience, you have to have, I think it's 28 games of at least 30 minutes in the NHL, or you're what's called a Group 6 free agent. And Comrie's actually played 28 games. I checked it yesterday. But you have to have at least 30 minutes in 28 games. So there's some games he didn't play that long. So he's technically a UFA. He could have been an RFA, but he's now a UFA. And in a league where a good, inexpensive backup goalie is a real luxury, I think that there's going to be some interest in him. I've heard that he's a guy that the teams have already been kind of looking at.
Bunting was a Group 6, I believe.
Yes.
That's how the Maple Leafs got him. Michael Bunting, the Rookie of the Year candidate, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Elliot.
Yes. By the way, when that was announced, I got to say, like, the memes I got, those were really well done. I have no problem with Bunting's candidacy.
I did get
a good laugh at some of those memes.
People are funny on the social media.
Yes.
San Jose Sharks, their GM Surge, and Ray Whitney, Elliot. We'll end on this one.
Well, you know, I heard, like, Jonathan Becker, who's the president of the Sharks, had done some interviews where he'd mentioned the phrases league experience. And you know, a couple people told me, you know, so I was kind of looking through the league. And they also said, some people also said, like, there would be interviews with people's San Jose connections. And this actually hit me last week when I was researching the whole Zadorov thing with the Glenn Denning hit. I was kind of looking through player safety, and I was kind of reminded that Whitney is there, and, you know, who drafted him. And so, you know, I was kind of trying to put two and two together. So I just kind of threw the note out there, and then someone mentioned to me, I didn't actually realize that, I guess there's a report he's interviewing there today, which I was not on top of. I didn't actually know that was the case. So it makes sense. Like, it fits the profile of what they've kind of been looking for. Like, I don't know if he's a top contender or anything like that. I think they're going to interview quite a few people, but it kind of fits the profile of what San Jose is thinking.
We'll see what happens there. Elliot, before I leave you, here's another little bit of information from the Western Hockey League U.S. draft, just to make you and me feel a little bit older. So,
oh, my goodness.
Blake Fidler, son of Vern Fidler, goes first overall. This is the WHL's U.S. draft. Goes first overall to Edmonton. 10th overall to the Prince Albert Raiders, Dylan Nolan, son of Owen Nolan.
Oh, my goodness.
We're old, Elliot.
We are really old.
That report from Sanaya Sapergi on Twitter, who is excellent. And
well, you know what Sanaya does? She keeps track of the names, right?
The Western Hockey League Ukrainian names are the best. Oh, she does such a great job. I love it. I love it. I love it. The Western Hockey League draft has the best names, and Sanaya has been documenting this for years. Oh, I just love it.
I think it's great. It's fun. I think that I always get a good laugh out of that stuff. I think it's very fun.
Yeah, you and me both. Sapergi does such a good job. All right, we'll watch for you tonight, Mr. Friedman. We see the Battle of Alberta and the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers. Enjoy it, pal.
All right, bud. Have a great night, Jeff.
There is Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada.